Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm looking to see what lies ahead. The old Romans used to tell the future by cutting animals open and examining their entrails. Due to some objections by anti-vivisectionists, we have to omit the butchering, but through the wonders of modern science, we are not denied a glimpse into the future. Besides, it's much more tidy this way. This is an X-ray of a goat, an animal which the ancients found to be full of strange portents. It looks like rain. I can see this will also give one insight about the past. For example, I now know what happened to those car keys I lost last summer. As to the immediate future, either this X-ray plate wasn't properly developed, or else we are in for a very dismal time of it for the next minute.
Good evening.
Welcome to Erie House Pre-Colonial Radio Drive-In Double Feature.
Get out the letter slides.
I have no internet. Dave is driving the bus, which means things will go smoothly.
Jeez. I'm veering off the road already.
Fire must miss. In any event, we're wrapping up our Alfred Hitchcock double feature weekend.
Yep. And, as always, you are... You are, aren't you?
You are.
Hello. Dale, introduce yourself. Introduce yourself, Dale.
Oh, I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, aren't I? And I'm sort of here with...
Oh, gosh.
I'm Dave Pinkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie, Spaceship One, trying to keep this ship steered in the right direction. And along with us is the most welcome and the beautiful. Go ahead, you're up next.
Felicitation, salutations, and happy Halloween. Last time I looked, this is CW.
Oh, this is going to be a fun ride tonight, folks. Yeah, part two of our Hitchcock, Rebecca. You know, I didn't even know that Mr. and Mrs. Smith, kind of a romantic comedy, was in Hitch's category until we presented it as a drive-in last night. Now here we have a romantic psychological thriller in Rebecca from 1940.
Ah, yes. Rebecca.
Originally featuring Laurence Olivier and Joan Fontaine, who I did not know. CW, I know you know this. My wife told me at lunch that Joan Fontaine is the sister of Olivia de Havilland. I did not know that.
Yes. Olivia de Havilland lived well over 100 to past 100. And she and her sister had a feud right up until the end.
Oh, really?
Yep. Apparently, they couldn't patch it up. So, one accused the other of sort of snubbing them. And really, they were both fantastically talented individuals, but they couldn't stand each other.
Well... You can't pick your family, can you? Oh, my.
Sorry, I'm on the road, so fasten your seat. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Thanks, Betty. This is based on the 1938 novel, the same name by Daphne du Maurier, and the movie was adapted, screenplay by Robert Sherwood and Joan Harrison. And I'm not sure who adapted it for the Lux Radio Theater. A lot of times they will they will throw that in on some of the sites. It did not say that this time, though, because they usually talk about the different adaptions and stuff. Now, the one that came out more recently, was that of a remake of the Rebecca story?
Memory serves, first one that I ever remember in film was with Olivier and Tane, and also Dame Judith, who Mrs. Danvers.
Okay, this is, I'm just looking at here. Yeah, this is a remake. In 2020, Netflix redid it with Armie Hammer. Yeah, Lily James, Kristen Scott Thomas, mm-hmm. Byron Miller, Sam Riley, and Ann Dowd. So that was a remake of the Hitchcock. I don't know why somebody thinks they could do better than Hitchcock.
Indeed, it would be hard. You'd be hard pressed to beat Hitchcock. Possible, but hard pressed.
That's right. Hitch is our man.
And he certainly has his weekend again tonight. He certainly even has his weekend again tonight.
Absolutely. As, would you put the link for you Judy Tenuta fans passed away this week. She was the comedy love. Yes, the comedy love goddess. And
who was that? Who was that?
Pigs.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Who was that? I'm sorry. It got cut out. Who passed away?
Judy Tenuta.
Hello? Oh, Judy Tenuta. Wow. She was way before her time. Way before her time.
She was like a female Sam Kinison. She could scream.
Well, maybe she had only so many screams in her body that once that last one went out, that was it.
Yeah. She'll be missed.
And in the chat room, we have good old Bob Fogsbane, and Gar the Ghoul joins us in the chat as he's getting ready for his horrible horror starring Gar the Ghoul, and that'll be on right after this show at 8 o'clock. Hi, Gar!
Hey, Gar! Hey, everybody in the chat room! Blah, blah, Gar! Hello!
So, I guess as a result, we should probably go ahead and kick off our first part one of our Lux Radio Theater, and this comes to us from February 3rd of 1941.
Rebecca was a best-selling novel before it made its great screen success, and tonight it's brought to you by one of America's best-selling products, Lux Flakes. And it's you, the women of America, who've made it a best-selling product. We want you to use our product week in and week out, not just because you like the plays in the Lux Radio Theater, but because Lux Flakes stands on its own merits. Take our word that it's worth a trial, and we'll take your word on the result. And we don't need three guesses what it's going to be. Now the curtain rises on a great love story, the strange drama of Rebecca. The scene of this drama is Mandalay, the great stone manor house high on a cliff above the restless sea. You'll hear Ronald Colman as Maxim de Winter, Judith Anderson as Mrs. Danvers, and Ida Lupino as the woman whose name we do not know.
Last night, I dreamt I went to Mandalay again. It seemed to me I stood by the iron gate leading to the drive. But for a while I could not enter, for the way was barred to me. Then, like all dreamers, I was possessed of a sudden with supernatural powers and passed like a spirit through the barrier before me. The drive wound away in front of me, twisting and turning, and finally, there was Mandalay. Mandalay, secretive and silent. Time could not mar the perfect symmetry of those walls, but I knew I looked upon a desolate, empty shell. We can never go back to Mandalay again. That much is certain. But sometimes, in my dreams, I do go back to the strange days of my life which began for me in the south of France. There, on a great cliff, towering above the sea, I first saw him. He was looking down, staring at the rocks below. And then suddenly, I thought I saw him. No, stop!
What the devil are you shouting about? Who are you? What are you staring at?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to stare, but you were so close to the edge of the cliff, I was afraid that...
Oh, you were. Well, what are you doing here?
Well, I was only walking. I came up the path
and... get on with your walking. Don't hang about here screaming. Go on.
I shall never come to Monte Carlo out of season again. Not a single well-known personality in the hotel. Oh, this coffee is stone cold. Waiter, the phone.
I don't believe he heard you, Mrs. Van Hoffer.
Well, get him. What are you being paid for, girl? You... Why, it's Max de Winter. See him coming this way.
Oh.
What are you looking surprised about?
Why, I saw him today on the cliff path.
Mr. de Winter, how do you do?
How do you do?
I'm Edith Van Hoffer. Do you remember me?
Oh,
it's so
yes.
Nice to run into you here. Do sit down and have some coffee. Mr. de Winter is having coffee with me. You may go.
Of course, Mrs. Van Hoffer.
I'm afraid I must contradict you. You shall both have coffee with me. Garçon. Coffee, please.
Oui, monsieur.
You know, I recognized you just as soon as you came in. Are you playing the tables much here at Monte?
No, I'm afraid that sort of thing ceased to amuse me years ago.
Oh, I can well understand that. If I had a home like Mandalay, I should certainly never come to Monte. I hear it's one of the biggest places in that part of the country, and that you just can't beat it for beauty.
And what do you think of Monte Carlo? Or don't you think of it at all?
Well, I think it's rather artificial.
She's spoiled, Mr. de Winter. That's her trouble. Most girls would give their eyes for a chance to see Monte.
Wouldn't that rather defeat the purpose?
But now that we've found each other again, I hope I shall be seeing something of you. Your valet has unpacked for you, I suppose.
I'm afraid I don't possess one. Perhaps you'd like to do it for me.
This young lady might make herself useful. She's a capable child in many ways, aren't you, dear?
Oh, Mrs. Van Hoek.
That's a charming suggestion, but I'm afraid I'd cling to the old motto, he travels fastest who travels alone. Perhaps you've not heard of it. Good night.
Well, what do you make of that? Do you suppose that sudden departure was intended to be funny? Or perhaps he didn't quite realize how it looked. Poor thing. I suppose he just can't get over his wife's death. They say he simply adored her.
When I came alone to the dining room the following day, he was already there, at the next table. As I sat down, I paid the penalty of my awkwardness. I knocked over a vase of flowers, the water soaking the cloth.
Mademoiselle.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What a stupid thing to do.
You may leave that, waiter. Go and lay another place at my table. Mademoiselle will have lunch with me.
Oui, monsieur.
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly.
Why not?
Oh, please, don't be polite. It's very kind of you,
I wasn't being polite. I should have asked you to lunch with me, even if you hadn't been so clumsy. Sit down. We needn't talk to each other if we don't feel like it.
Well, thank you very much.
What's happened to your friend?
Why, she's ill in bed with a cold.
Ah. I'm sorry I was rude to you yesterday. The only excuse I can offer is that I've become boorish through living alone.
Oh, but you weren't really. You just wanted to be by yourself.
Tell me, is Mrs. Van Hoffer a friend of yours or just a relation?
No, she's my employer. I'm what is known as a paid companion.
I didn't know that companionship could be bought. Is that a sketching pad? Do you sketch?
Yes, I do a little.
Were you going sketching this afternoon?
Yes.
Where?
Well, I hadn't made up my mind.
I'll drive you somewhere in the car.
Oh, no. No, please. I didn't
nonsense,
mean that.
Nonsense. Order your lunch and we'll get along. Well, you've taken long enough with that sketch. I'll expect a really fine work of art.
Well, you're not a very easy subject. Your expression keeps changing all the time.
Does it? Well, I'd concentrate on the view instead if I were you. It's much more worthwhile. Rather reminds me of our coastline at home. Do you know Cornwall at all?
Oh, yes. Yes, I went there once on a holiday. I remember I was in a shop there, and I saw a postcard with a beautiful house on it right by the sea. I asked whose house it was, and the old lady said, why, that's Manderley.
Yes, Manderley is beautiful, but to me it's just the place where I was born and have lived in all my life. Now I don't suppose I shall ever see it again.
Oh, well, we're lucky not to be home during the bad weather, aren't we? You know, I can't ever remember enjoying swimming at home until June, can you? But the water's so warm here, I could stay in all day. But do you know there's a dangerous undertow, and there was a man drowned here last year. But I never have any fear of drowning, have you?
Why did you say that?
Well, have I said something wrong? Oh, I didn't mean to.
Oh, well, come along. I'll take you home.
That night, I learned the reason for his strangeness. Coming home late, I opened the door. I heard Mrs. Van Hopper talking to the nurse.
Oh, yes, I knew him quite well. I knew his wife, too. She was the beautiful Rebecca Hildreth, you know, the most glamorous creature in all England. She was drowned, poor thing, while she was sailing near Manderley.
Oh, I'm glad it can't happen twice. That fever of first love. I've forgotten much of Monte Carlo, of those morning drives with him, of where we went and of what we said. But I've not forgotten how I trembled as I sat beside him. You know, I do wish there could be an invention that bottled up the memory like perfume. And then whenever I wanted to, I could just uncork the bottle and live the memory all over again.
And what particular moment in your young life would you want to keep?
Oh, all of them. All of these last few days.
Sometimes, you know, those little bottles contain demons that have a way of popping out at you, just as you're trying most desperately to forget.
Yes, of course.
And stop biting your nails.
Oh, I didn't know I was. Mr. De Winter, would you please tell me why you asked me to come out with you? Oh, it's obvious that you want to be kind, but why do you choose me for your charity?
I asked you to come out with me because I wanted your company. You've blotted out the past for me more than all the bright lights of Monte Carlo. But if you think I asked you out of kindness or charity, you can leave the car now and find your own way home. Go on, open the door and get out. Here, take my handkerchief. You'd better blow your nose.
Thank you, Mr. De Winter.
And please, don't call me Mr. De Winter. I have a very impressive array of first names. George, Fortescue, Maximilian. But you needn't bother with them all at once. My family call me Maxim. Come in. Well, hello. And what are you doing here? Anything the matter?
I've come to say goodbye, Maxim. We're going away.
Oh. Where's she taking you to?
New York. Oh, I don't want to go. I shall hate it. I shall be miserable.
Do you mind if I finish shaving? I shan't be long.
But I can't stay.
Tell me something. Which would you prefer, New York or Manderley?
Oh, please don't joke about it. Mrs. Van Hopper's waiting. So I'd better say goodbye now.
I'll repeat what I said. Either you go to America with Mrs. Van Hopper, or you come home to Manderley with me.
You mean you want a secretary or something?
I'm asking you to marry me, you little fool.
Marry you?
Well, my suggestion doesn't seem to have gone at all well. I'm sorry.
Oh, but you don't understand. It's that I'm just not the sort of person men marry.
What on earth do you mean?
Well, I don't belong in your sort of world, for one thing.
What is my sort of world?
Well, Manderley. Oh, you know what I mean.
Well, I'm the best judge of whether you belong there or not. Of course, if you don't love me, that's a different thing. A fine blow to my conceit, that's all.
Oh, but I do love you. I love you most dreadfully. I've been crying all morning because I thought I'd never see you again.
Bless you for that. I'll remind you of this one day, and you won't believe me. It's a pity you have to grow up.
I was afraid to tell Mrs. Van Hopper, for I knew what she would say. When we were alone, she congratulated me, that I didn't like her smile.
But of course you know why he's marrying you, don't you? The fact is, that empty house got on his nerves. He just couldn't go on living alone. You haven't flattered yourself that he's in love with you, I hope. Not after being married to Rebecca Hildreth, the most beautiful, the most cultured woman in all England. Well, goodbye and good luck, Mrs. De Winter.
We were married that evening in a little village near the sea. And in early May, we came to Manderley. It was raining as we drove through the high iron gates. The drive twisted and turned as a serpent. And then suddenly, there was the house. Manderley. A thing of grace and beauty. And yet somehow almost frightening. As we came into the great hall, I saw that it was crowded with people. The staff of the house and the estate. They stood silent and curious, gazing at me. And then someone advanced from the sea of faces. She was tall and gaunt, dressed in deep black. And her prominent cheekbones and hollow eyes gave her a sort of skull's face.
And this is Mrs. Danvers. You won't have to worry about the house at all, darling. Mrs. Danvers takes care of everything.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Danvers.
Good evening, madam. I have everything in readiness for you.
Well, that's so good of you.
Will you go to your room now, madam, or will you have tea in the library?
Why, I don't think
the room
I...
first, Mrs. Danvers.
Yes, sir. This way, if you please, madam. I hope you approve the new decorations of these rooms, madam.
Oh, I didn't know it had been changed. What did it look like before, Mrs. Danvers?
It had an old paper and different hangings. It was never used much, except for occasional visitors.
Oh. Then it wasn't Mr. De Winter's room originally.
No, madam. He has never used the east wing before. The only good view of the sea is from the west wing.
Mrs. Danvers, I suppose you've been at Manderley for many years.
I came here when the first Mrs. De Winter was a bride.
Oh, I do hope we'll be friends, Mrs. Danvers. But you must be patient with me. You see, this sort of life is... Well, it's so new to me. And I do want to make a success of it and make Mr. De Winter happy. So I know I can leave all the household arrangements to you.
I hope I shall do everything to your satisfaction, madam. I have managed the house since Mrs. De Winter's death, and Mr. De Winter has never complained.
Well, I think I'll go downstairs now.
Certainly, madam. The room in the west wing I was telling you about is there, through that door. It's not used now. The most beautiful room in the house. The only one that looks down across the lawns to the sea. It was Mrs. De Winter's room.
I knew that night that Mrs. Danvers despised me. Standing there, watching me. Laughing silently at my awkwardness. Telling me over and over that there'd been another before me. The beautiful Rebecca Hildreth. There was everything to remind me of that. The embroidered letter R on the linens. Her writing paper in the drawers of the desk. Her dog, who still slept outside her room. She was everywhere at Manderley. Rebecca, who had died, and who still wandered through that house.
Oh, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
You're Mrs. De Winter, aren't you?
Why, yes.
My name's Crawley. I manage the estate for Maxine. Awfully glad to meet you.
How do you do?
Fearful lot of stuff piled up while Maxine was away.
Yes, I'm sure there must have been. Oh, I do wish I could help with some of it.
Help him? Frank never allows anybody to help him. He's like an old mother hen with his bills and rents and taxes. Come on, Frank, we must go over those estimates.
I'll get my papers.
Later on this afternoon, we'll take a walk around the estate, darling, just you and I. There's a good deal I want you to see.
I'll be ready, Maxim, any time.
And we're back.
And we're back.
And we're back.
We are back.
With dead yes. Becca.
Yes. Yeah. If anyone's a Carol Burnett fan, she did a spoof on Rebecca called Rebecky. And it is hilarious. It's not as good as the number one, her Starlet O'Hara spoof, but it's good. Oh yeah. I want to dress like that. I'm just going to rip down the curtains and just go outside.
And that was Bob Mackie that made that design for her.
I know. I mean, that probably took more work for him to design that thing than any of the outfits he ever made in his career.
Probably. I'm getting a kick out of hearing Ronald Coleman here. I mean, he has such a great delivery and did a heck of a lot of radio, you know, close to a dozen Lux Radio theaters. But he also hosted Favorite Story. He was a semi-regular for a while on Jack Benny's show as his next-door neighbor. I think he also hosted a wartime program that Arch Obler wrote called Everything for the Boys. And he also did his own program, a comedy, a sitcom, with his wife Benita. It's coming to the Halls of Ivy, about a college professor in an old small college town. And that series is written by Don Quinn, who wrote Fibber McGee and Molly for so many years.
Wow!
Productions.
And of course, was imitated several times on Get Smart by Maxwell Smart. Whenever he would go, "Ah, if I were king," he was doing this Ronald Coleman.
Cool.
Yeah.
He does have a distinctive voice. I take it he wasn't from Brooklyn.
Probably not, but you never know. Those Brooklyn guys get a little tricky.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, my goodness, when they get rid of their accents, they go all the way.
born in England, remained active for more than four decades, and of course, remembered, his most remembered performance was the portrayal of the violent-tempered actor in the 1947 film A Double Life. So, for which he received an Oscar for that. Yeah.
Yeah, split personality. I think that was one of the first earlier movies to delve into split personality syndrome, or whatever they're calling it nowadays, multiple personalities or something,
yep.
I'm not well.
I think split personalities are cool. I can get so much more done that way.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Put them to work.
Yep, that's right. Put them all to work. It makes me more productive.
There you go. Put all those personalities.
Yeah, make me in charge. In charge of that one, the booze.
Yeah. Now, one that likes to drink Mr. Bubble, that one slows me down a bit, but the others are okay.
Mr. Bubble. Not Dr. Pepper, Mr. Bubble.
No, Mr. Bubble. Oh. Mr. Bubble, yeah.
He drinks Mr. Bubble. Yeah.
Mr. Bubble.
That's a little problematic.
Are we talking about the bath soap?
Who does not want to drink Mr. Bubble? Mr. Bubble.
Yeah. Yum, yum.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of radio. I'll bet there's a lot of radio.
A whole lot of radio, so I guess we better get into part two.
There's a ton of it.
There must be, because it's time for part two of Alfred Hitchcock's adapted Rebecca for the Lux Radio Theater.
Come along, Jasper. Come along. Keep that coat up around you, darling.
It isn't raining now, Maxim, must I?
Certainly. Can't be too careful with children, you know.
Oh, it's glorious here. I love every foot of it, Maxim.
Jasper! Here, not that way! Jasper, come back!
He went down those stairs by the cliff, Maxim. We Where does that lead to?
Oh, it leads to a little cove where we used to keep a boat.
Oh, let's go down there.
No, it's only a dull and uninteresting stretch of sand, just like any other.
Oh, please, Maxim. No,
some other time, dear, not today.
Listen, is that Jasper? Well, there must be something wrong. Perhaps he's hurt himself.
Well, he's all right. Leave him alone.
Oh, I think I'd better go and see.
No, come back. Don't bother about him. He can't come to any harm. He'll find his own way back.
There you are. What do you want in that cottage, Jasper? Come on home. Come on, boy. Come on, Jasper.
He's looking for her.
Oh. Oh, I didn't know there was anybody.
Oh, no, that doggy comes from the house. He aren't your own.
No. No, he's Mr. De Winter's dog.
Oh, no, that dog. He comes down looking for her.
Who? Whose cottage is this?
Mrs. De Winter.
Oh. Come here, Jasper.
You won't tell anyone you saw me in here, will you?
Don't you belong on the estate?
Oh, yes, but I won't do nothing. I was just putting my shells away. She's gone in the sea, ain't she? She'll never come back no more.
No. No, she'll never come back. Come on, Jasper. Come on, boy. Maxim, here I am. Wait, Maxim. I'm so sorry I was such a time.
You knew I didn't want you to go there, but you deliberately went.
Oh, why not, Maxim? There was only a cottage down there and a strange man.
Well, don't go there again. Do you hear?
Why not, Maxim?
Because I hate the place. And if you had my memories, you wouldn't go there or talk about it or even think about it.
What's the matter? Well, I'm so sorry. Maxim.
We should have stayed away. We should never have come back to Manderley. What a fool I was.
I've made you unhappy. Somehow I've hurt you. I can't bear to see you like this, Maxim. Because I love you so much.
But do you? Do you? Oh, I've made you cry. Forgive me. I sometimes seem to fly off the handle for no reason at all, don't I? Come. We'll go home and have some tea and forget all about it.
Yes. Yes, let's forget all about it.
So ends Act One of Rebecca, starring Ronald Coleman, Ida Lupino, and Judith Anderson. Mr. DeMille brings you Act Two in just a moment. But now, a word about what women are telling us is the biggest bargain they've seen in a long time. The beautiful Gone with the Wind brooch, which the makers of Lux Flakes are now offering.
That's just what Mrs. Janet Bell of New York says, Mr. Ruick. She got her brooch the other day and wrote us a letter saying, "My Gone with the Wind brooch is so much lovelier even than I had thought it would be, and such a wonderful bargain that I want to thank you for it and to let you know how pleased I am with it. Thanks again for my lovely brooch and for such a wonderful product as Lux Flakes."
We know every one of you will feel just as delighted as Mrs. Bell when you see this stunning Gone with the Wind brooch. And in a moment, I'll tell you how easy it is to get it. The original was one of the gorgeous jewelry pieces worn in the movie Gone with the Wind. Our reproduction is a distinctive and expensive-looking pin with five simulated pearls and a lovely turquoise-colored stone in the center of an antique-style, gold-finished setting. It's big, round, and almost 2 inches across, with a graceful scalloped edge and a sturdy safety catch on the clasp. You'll find it adds a handsome touch to your new spring prints and to daytime and party dresses, too. Now listen carefully. Here's what you do to get your Gone with the Wind brooch. First, buy a big box of Lux Flakes. You'll want plenty of new Quick Lux on hand anyway for all your nice things, for stockings, underthings, sweaters, washable dresses, and for dishwashing, too. Then, tear off the opening tab at the top corner of the Lux box.
Yeah.
Mail it, with 15 cents in coin, please don't send stamps, to Lux, Box 1, New York City. Lux, Box 1, New York City. And don't forget, we can't send you a brooch unless you send us your name and address. With your brooch, you'll receive an illustrated order blank for matching jewelry pieces. Ring, pendant, bracelet, earrings, and all wonderful bargains. Now be sure to send your order in soon, for these pins are going like hotcakes, and the offer is limited. We're sorry, but this offer is good only in the United States. Now, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
We begin the second act of our play, starring Ronald Colman as Maxim De Winter, Judith Anderson as Mrs. Danvers, and Ida Lupino as the woman who is now Mrs. De Winter, the woman who is telling this story of Rebecca.
The weather was wet and cold for almost a week, and we didn't go down to the beach again. But I couldn't forget the dark, lost look in Maxim's eyes when we came up the path through the woods. It was my fault. I'd gone down to that cottage. I seemed to have opened up a road into the past, and there was a barrier between us because of it. I began to dread any mention of the sea, until one morning in the library, I was alone with Frank Crawley. Mr. Crawley, I was down at the cottage on the beach the other day. Are those all Rebecca's things down there?
Yes, they are.
Oh. What did she use the cottage for?
The boat used to be moored near there.
The boat? Was that the boat she was sailing in when she was drowned?
Yes, it capsized and sank. She was washed overboard.
Where did they find her?
Near Edgecombe, about 40 miles up channel, about 2 months afterwards. Maxim went up to identify her. Oh, it was horrible for him.
Yes. Yes, it must have been. Mr. Crawley, please don't think me morbidly curious. But would you answer just one more question?
If it's something I'm able to answer.
Tell me, what was Rebecca really like?
I suppose she was the most beautiful creature I ever saw.
Maxim had to go up to London at the end of June. Some business of the estate. Frank Crawley had gone along with him, and I was alone at Mandalay. I was surprised one evening to hear voices coming from the west wing, from the room that was once Rebecca's.
I really don't think it was wise of you to come here, Mr. Jack.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. It's been just like coming back home. But I must say I feel a little like the poor relations sneaking around through back doors. Well, toodaloo, Danny.
Goodbye, Mr. Jack, and please be careful.
I will, don't worry. Oh, hello.
Good evening.
Danny, all your precautions were in vain. The mistress of the house was hiding behind the door.
Oh, but I wasn't, really, I wasn't. I heard voices in here.
What about presenting me to the bride, Danny?
This is Mr. Favell, madam.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Will you have some tea or something?
Now, isn't that a charming invitation? I've been asked to stay to tea, Danny.
It's rather late.
Oh, well, perhaps you're right. And we mustn't lead the bride astray, must we? Well, goodbye. Oh, and I know what was wrong with our introduction. Danny didn't tell you, did she? I'm Rebecca's favorite cousin. Toodaloo.
The man went quickly down the stairs, and Mrs. Danvers went after him. All of a sudden, I had a terrifying impulse to see what lay behind the door in front of me. The door of Rebecca's room. I pushed it open slowly. I could hear the sea plainly through the window. I'd expected to see the furniture swathed in dust sheets. Nothing was covered up. There were flowers on the dressing table. Satin dressing gown on the chair. And beneath, a pair of bedroom slippers. Oh!
Do you wish anything, madam?
No. No, I just...
You've always wanted to see this room, haven't you, madam? Why did you never ask me to show it to you?
It's a lovely room, isn't it? The most beautiful room you've ever seen.
Everything is kept just as Mrs. De Winter liked it. Nothing has been altered since that last night. You wouldn't think she'd been gone so long, would you? Sometimes, when I walk along the corridor, I fancy I hear her just behind me, that quick, light step. I couldn't mistake it anywhere. It's not only in this room. It's in all the rooms in the house. I can almost hear it now. Do you believe the dead come back and watch the living?
No. No. I don't believe it.
Sometimes.
I wonder if she doesn't come back here to Manderley and watch you and Mr. De Winter together. You look tired. Why don't you stay here a while and rest? Listen to the sea. So soon.
No. No. No, I...
Listen to it. Listen to the sea.
I won't listen. I won't. I won't. I won't. I won't. Maxim, I'm so glad you're home again.
Hey, you're joking me. Well, what have you been doing with yourself?
Well, I've been thinking. Darling, could we have a costume ball just as you used to?
Well, what put that idea into your mind?
Oh, nothing. I just feel that we ought to do something to make people feel that Manderley is the same as it always was. Oh, please, darling, could we?
Well, all right. If you think you'd enjoy it, you'd better get Mrs. Danvers to help you, hadn't you?
No. No, I don't need Mrs. Danvers to help me. I can do it myself, Maxim.
All right, my sweet.
But Mrs. Danvers did help me. It was she who suggested that I design my costume after one of the family portraits in the gallery. A lovely young woman in a white dress with great puffed sleeves. When the night of the party arrived, I could hardly contain myself for excitement, for I kept the costume as a surprise for Maxim. I ran quickly down the stairs, and then I waited for the clapping and the laughter that would greet me. Nobody clapped. Nobody moved. And then Maxim was coming toward me, his face white, his eyes blazing.
What the devil do you think you're doing?
Maxim, it's the picture, the one in the gallery. Oh, what have I done?
Go and take it off. Doesn't matter what you put on, anything will do. What are you standing there for? Didn't you hear what I said? Take it off!
I watched you go down the stairs, just as I watched her a year ago. Even in the same dress, you couldn't compare with her.
Same dress. You knew it. You knew that she wore it. And yet you deliberately suggested I wear it. Why do you hate me? What have I done to you that you should hate me so?
You tried to take her place. You let him marry you. I've seen his face, his eyes. They're the same as those first weeks after she died. I used to listen to him walking up and down all night long, night after night, thinking of her, suffering torture because he'd lost her.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
You thought you could be Mrs. De Winter, live in her house, walk in her steps, take the things that were hers, but she's too strong for you. You can't fight her. No one ever got the better of her. Never, never. She was beaten in the end, but it wasn't a man. It wasn't a woman. It was the sea.
Stop it! Stop it! Oh, stop it!
You're overwrought, madam. I'll open a window for you. A little air will do you good. Come and stand here, madam. Don't be afraid. Now look down there. Isn't the sea lovely? Why don't you go? Why don't you leave Manderley? He doesn't need you. He's got his memories. You've nothing to stay for. You've nothing to live for, really, have you? Look down there. It's easy, isn't it? Why don't you? Why don't you? Go on. Don't be afraid. Why don't you jump?
Ah! What is it? What's that noise? Maxim! Maxim, where are you? Maxim! What is it? What is it? What's happened?
Shipwreck. There's a ship aground sending up rockets. Robbie, notify the Coast Guard. Shipwreck!
Maxim on the beach?
Not since half an hour ago.
He hasn't been in the house all night. I'm afraid something might have happened to him. Frank, what's the matter? You look terribly worried.
Well, the diver who went down to inspect the bottom of the ship came across the hull of another boat, a little sailboat.
Oh, Frank, Is it?
Yes, it's Rebecca's.
Rebecca's? Why did they have to find it? Why couldn't they have left it there in peace at the bottom of the sea? Poor Maxim. It'll be so hard on him.
Yes, it's going to bring it all back again, worse than before.
So Rebecca's a little soggy, is she?
A real drip. Yeah.
She's all wet. Oh, almost.
Yeah.
She almost was all wet. If she had taken that dive.
Or did she?
Yeah, watch me dive into this little tank here, yeah. Hey, Dale, here's an interesting fact you might get. Ronald Coleman passed away in May of 1958, battling acute emphysema. At the time of his death, he was contracted to star in MGM's Village of the Damned. The film was eventually made by a British production company starring George Sanders. And George Sanders also married the widow of Benita Hume. Hmm, is it like this story here? I don't know.
Woo!
Chilling facts from Dave.
He was contracted to star in Village of the Damned. So
I love that movie so much. Dave, you do know there is a BBC radio play of that called The Midwich Cuckoos, which is the name of the book that the movie's based on.
We'll have to do something about that.
With my attorneys for taking my life story, Village Idiot. So.
Someone call Moose and Elk. Moose and Elk. Calling
Moose
and Elk. Moose
and Elk. We need you for this one.
Yeah. That'll cost you an arm and a leg. If you're lucky. If you're lucky. Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't have an arm and a leg, we'll take your next door neighbor. We're not picky.
Yep. Interesting thing about Ronald Coleman, he became interested in acting, didn't act, but became interested when he was away at boarding school. During World War One, he joined the London Scottish Regiment as part of the Territorial Army. His was one of the first units mobilized in the outbreak of World War One. He took a piece of shrapnel in the ankle at the Battle of Messines in 1914. The injury left him with a limp that he spent his entire career trying to hide. So,
ouch.
Which was easier to do on radio. It was easier to hide the limp.
A little bit easier on radio, yeah.
Yep.
Ow.
And he's replacing Laurence Olivier in this from the Hitchcock film. And Laurence Olivier once said of Ronald Coleman, he has the deep but gentle masculinity, the ideal of the Englishman. So,
blimey.
There you go.
Blimey. I prayed.
Blimey, he's a limey. All right.
Blimey, he's a limey. I'm surprised. Well, it just goes to show how many accents everyone thinks this dinky little country. It's England. Everything's English. Don't you forget how Gary Cooper, Judy, which he never really said.
Which he never really said, yes. I forget. It was some comedian that said that. I forget who it was.
Yes.
But then everybody said that afterwards. Just like Jack Webb never said it, just the facts, ma'am. That all came from Stan Freberg. And that became one of Jack Webb's most quotable lines that he never said.
Which is awesome.
Yep.
Yes, awesome. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts.
Yep. So much fun. So much fun.
Outstanding, Ronald Coleman. And just to segue a tad for Star Trek fans, Dame Judith Anderson, who is Miss Danny Danvers, she was in Star Trek, The Search for Spock, as a high priestess on Vulcan. And I apologize, I can't remember her character's name.
Snurdly.
It could be. It could be Snurdly.
Snurdly?
Yes, Snurdly. Snurdly. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means.
Oh, and of course, Miss Ida Lupino, one of the first female directors in Hollywood. Hello, who rules the world, girl? Who rules the world?
And was
girl?
The Wasp Woman. Yep.
Was the Wasp Woman?
Oh, yeah.
The Wasp
okay.
Woman.
Oh, the Wasp yeah. Woman. The Wasp Woman, yeah.
Yes.
And
the almost
actually,
public domain movie.
Yeah. What do you mean almost public? That's not public domain?
I think it's one of those on the bubble.
Okay.
Really?
Still?
Yeah,
she was also the only person, let alone woman, the only person to both star in A Twilight Zone and direct A Twilight Zone.
Ooh.
Yummy.
That's a prestigious company right there.
She starred in 16mm Shrine, and I forget which episode she directed, but she was she might have even directed that episode. I'm not quite sure, but she was the only person to both star in an episode and direct an episode of Twilight Zone.
That's awesome.
Outstanding. Hats off indeed. Is Twilight Zone still in a reboot?
I'm not sure.
I think
whether
so.
It's on the CBS streaming channel, so I'm not sure whether it's still there.
You talking about the Jordan Peele thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think so,
yeah.
I,
mean,
I watched a few of those. I watched a few of those, and the fact is, I think it would have been better if they had left it a half-hour series. I mean, there was so much filler in there that I think it took away from the show. And even as Rod's hour-long shows dragged a little, these drag quite a bit. And they're out of there. If they were all half-hour, I think they'd be much better stories because you get much more to the point with your half-hour story.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should use the luxury of the fact that they're a streaming service, that some stories could be 30 minutes and others perhaps 45 and others if they really have the meat a full hour. I would think they would just take advantage of it.
That's very much what BBC does, and even Netflix to a degree does that as well. Because Rowan Atkinson recently this year did a series called Man versus Bee, and the first episode is like 28 minutes. The most of the rest of them are between 12 and 16 minutes, but they're all different times.
Mm-hmm. I think they're doing an hour because it's just such a war with the streaming services now. They're just fighting over people's wallets so readily.
Yeah,
that they just want to get people
Paramount
every.
Plus, yeah, it's Paramount Plus now, but it was something else before that. But technically, it's CBS owned. I think. Or Paramount.
I don't know. Did Disney buy that?
I don't know how that goes.
Did Disney buy it yet? Disney's buying up everything.
No. Yeah, it seems that. No, that's one that's either owned by Paramount or owned by CBS. Yeah. It's going to end up as a big mouse. You never know.
But I throw down the I'm throwing down the gauntlet. Any actresses who are out there who go on the Twilight Zone, see if you can get a stint being a director. It's time to break Ida Lupino's record. With all due respect to Ida Lupino, break that record. Get out there and do it. Because I said so. That's why.
Oh, okay. Because you said so. And because you say so, we probably should go on to part three of Rebecca.
Absolutely.
From Lux Radio Theater. Yes. You know, Dale, I can't do a segue like you. I'm sorry.
I searched the beach frantically for Maxim, but there was no sign of him. Then suddenly I came upon the boathouse, Rebecca's cottage. There was a light burning dimly in the window. I pushed open the door, and there in the light of the dying fire, I saw the tortured face of Maxim.
Hello. Come in.
Maxim, you haven't had any sleep. Have you forgiven me?
Forgiven you?
For last night, Maxim. My stupidity about the costume.
Oh, that's... I'd forgotten.
Oh, Maxim, can't we start all over again? I don't ask that you should love me. I won't ask impossible things. I'll be your friend and companion. I'll be happy with that.
You love me very much, don't you? But it's too late, my darling. We've lost our little chance of happiness.
No, Maxim, no.
It's all over now. Rebecca has won. Her shadow has been between us all the time, keeping us from one another. She knew that this would happen.
What are you saying, Maxim?
They sent a diver down. He found another boat.
I know. Rebecca's boat.
The diver made another discovery. He broke one of the ports and looked into the cabin. There was a body in there.
A body? Well, then she wasn't alone. There was someone sailing with her.
No, you don't understand. There was no one with her. It's Rebecca's body lying there on the cabin floor.
Oh, no. No.
The woman that was washed up at Edgecombe, the woman that is now buried in the family crypt, that was not Rebecca. That was the body of some unknown woman, unclaimed, belonging nowhere. I identified it, but I knew it wasn't Rebecca. I knew where Rebecca's body was, lying on that cabin floor on the bottom of the sea.
How did you know, Maxim?
Because I put it there.
You? You?
Will you look into my eyes and tell me that you love me now?
Oh, Maxim.
You see, I was right. It's too late.
No. No, it's not too late, Maxim. You're not to say that. We can't lose each other now. We must be together always.
We may only have a few hours, a few days.
Oh, Maxim, why didn't you tell me before?
Sometimes I nearly did, but you never seemed close enough.
How could we be close when I knew you were always thinking of Rebecca? How could I even ask you to love me when I knew you loved Rebecca still?
What are you talking about? You thought I loved Rebecca? I hated her.
Hated her?
I was carried away by her, yes, enchanted by her as everyone was. But I never had a moment's happiness with her. She was incapable of love, or tenderness, or decency.
You didn't love her.
Do you remember that cliff where you first saw me in Monte Carlo? Well, I went there with Rebecca on our honeymoon. That was what I found out about her. Only 4 days after we were married. She stood there laughing, her black hair blowing in the wind, and told me all about herself. Things I'll never tell a living soul. I wanted to kill her. I'll make a bargain with you, she said. You'd look rather foolish trying to divorce me now after 4 days of marriage, so I'll play the part of a devoted wife, mistress of Manderley. And people will visit us and envy us and say we're the luckiest, happiest couple in the county. What a grand joke it will be. What a triumph. I should never have accepted her dirty bargain, but I did, and I kept it. So did she, apparently. But after a while, she began to grow careless. Then she started to bring her friends down here. I warned her, but she only shrugged her shoulders. And then there was a cousin of hers, a man named Favell.
Yes, I know him.
You?
Yes, he came the day you went to London.
Why didn't you tell me?
Well, I didn't like to, Maxim. I thought it would remind you of Rebecca.
Remind me? As if I needed reminding. Favell used to visit her here in this cottage. I found out about it and I warned her that if he came here again, I'd shoot them both. One night, when I found that she'd come back quietly from London, I thought that Favell was with her. I decided to come down here and have it out with both of them. But she was alone. She was lying on the divan. She looked ill, queer. Suddenly she got up, started to walk toward me. When I have a child, she said, neither you nor anyone else can ever prove it wasn't yours. You'd like to have an heir, wouldn't you, Max, for your precious Manderley? And then she started to laugh. How funny, she said. I'll be the perfect mother, just as I've been the perfect wife, and no one will ever know. She was face to face with me. She was smiling. Well, Max, what are you going to do about it? Aren't you going to kill me? Well, I suppose I went mad for a moment. I must have struck her. She stood staring at me. She looked almost triumphant, and then she started forward toward me again, smiling. Suddenly she stumbled and fell. When I looked down, ages afterwards it seemed, she was lying on the floor. She'd struck her head on a heavy piece of ship's tackle. I remember wondering why she was still smiling, and then I realized she was dead.
But you didn't kill her, Maxim. It was an accident.
Who would believe me? I lost my head. I knew I had to do something, anything. I carried her out to the boat. I put her in the cabin. When the boat seemed a safe distance from the shore, I took a spike and drove it again and again through the planking of the hull. I opened up the seacocks and the water began to come in fast. I climbed over into the dinghy and pulled away. Then I saw the boat heel over and sink.
Maxim, does anyone else know of this?
No, no one except you and me.
We must explain it. It's got to be the body of someone you've never seen before.
No, they're bound to know her. Her rings and bracelets, she always wore them. They'll identify her body. Then they'll remember the other woman. The other woman buried in the crypt.
Oh, Maxim.
I've done a very selfish thing in marrying you. I've loved you, my darling. I shall always love you. But I've known all along that Rebecca would win in the end.
No. No, she hasn't won. No matter what happens now, she hasn't won.
Hello. Oh, hello, Frank. Who? Colonel Julian? Yes. Yes, tell him I'll meet him there as soon as I possibly can.
What's happened, Maxim?
Colonel Julian called. He's the chief constable of the county. He wants to know if I could possibly have made a mistake about that other body.
Mr. DeMille presents Ronald Coleman, Ida Lupino, and Judith Anderson in Act 3 of Rebecca after a brief intermission. Meanwhile, it's breakfast time in the Browning household, and Midge is late, as usual.
Midge, hurry, dear. The postman left a package for you, and it's nearly school time.
Oh, where is it? It must be my brooch. Oh, it is. Oh, Mother, isn't it gorgeous? Now I won't mind wearing my old dress to Betty's party with this on it.
Why, it's perfectly beautiful, dear. You know, it looks like some of that lovely old jewelry from Grandmother's family down in Charleston.
You'll agree with Mother Browning when you get this Gone with Wind brooch which Lux is offering. For it has an authentic Southern accent. The original was worn in Gone with the Wind. Now, it's entirely different from the Scarlett O'Hara brooch we offered last fall, and even lovelier. You'll wear it to add new glamour to a dress you've grown a bit bored with. And it will be smart with your new spring outfits, too. Let me describe it for you. In the center is a big turquoise-colored stone with five lovely simulated pearls around it. The setting is round, almost 2 inches wide, and gold-finished in antique style with a scalloped edge. It's beautifully made. Even has a safety catch on the clasp. Yet it's yours for only 15 cents and an opening tab from a large box of Lux Flakes. Now, here's the way to get your Gone with the Wind brooch. Please listen carefully to these directions. And above all, please send for your brooch without delay, because the orders are pouring in, and the offer is for a limited time. Now, first, buy a big box of new Quick Lux Flakes. It comes in the same familiar package and costs you no more. Tear off the opening tab at the top corner of the Lux box and mail it with 15 cents in coin, no stamps, please, and your name and address to Lux, Box 1, New York City. Lux, Box 1, New York City. With your brooch, we'll send an illustrated order blank for additional matching pieces. Ring, pendant, bracelet, earrings, and all wonderful bargains. Now remember, send the opening tab from a large box of Lux Flakes, 15 cents in coin, and your name and address to Lux, Box 1, New York. This offer is good only in the United States. We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Curtain rises on the third act of Rebecca, and the girl whom Maxim de Winter brought home as a bride to the brooding towers of Mandalay goes on with her strange story.
The body they had found in the boat was identified as Rebecca de Winter. There had to be an inquest, of course. Maxim was calm. Almost too calm. I think that frightened me even more.
Sorry to drag you back for further questioning, Mr. De Winter. You've heard the statement of the boat builder, Mr. Tabb. I wonder if you can help us in any way.
I'm afraid not.
The holes in the planking were evidently made from the inside. Can you think of any reason for that?
Of course I can't think of any reason.
Then, since Mrs. De Winter went sailing alone, are we to believe that she drove those holes herself?
You may believe what you like.
Can you enlighten us as to why Mrs. De Winter should have wanted to end her own life?
I know of no reason whatever.
Mr. De Winter, however painful it may be, I have to ask you a very personal question. Were relations between you and the late Mrs. De Winter perfectly happy? Once again, were relations between you...
I won't stand this any longer, and you might as well know that...
Don't, Maxim, don't you, can't you?
Mrs. De Winter.
We'll adjourn until after luncheon.
Darling, darling, are you all right? Frank, help me. I'll take her outside. Careful, darling. There's no rush. I'll take you to the car.
Oh, Maxim, it was so foolish of me fainting like that.
Hello.
Maxim, it's that Pavel.
And how does the bride find herself today?
What do you want, Favelle?
How are you, Max? I was rather worried about you when I heard about the inquest. That's why I came down.
Yes, I'm touched by your solicitude, but if you don't mind...
Well, my guess is that they'll turn in a verdict of suicide. That is, of course, unless something unforeseen occurs.
What do you mean?
Well, I have a strong feeling that before the day is out, somebody's going to make use of that rather expressive, though somewhat old-fashioned term, foul play.
Go on.
You see, Max, I find myself in a rather awkward position. You've only got to read this note to understand. It's from Rebecca. She wrote it to me the day she died.
What makes you think that note would interest me?
Oh, I'm not going to bother you with the contents now, but I can assure you that it's not the note of a woman who intends to drown herself that same night. You know, Max, I've often wondered what it would be like to retire to the country. I've never figured out what it would cost a year, but I'd like to talk about it with you.
Darling... Mr. Favelle and I have a little business transaction on hand. I think we'd better conduct it over at the inn. They may have a private room there.
But, Maxim...
Are you all right now, dear?
Yes, I...
Frank will be here in a moment. Ask him to find Colonel Julian. Then come over to the inn immediately. Come on, Favelle, let's go. Colonel Julian, this is Mr. Favelle.
Oh, I know Colonel Julian. We're old friends, aren't we?
Good morning.
Well, since you're old friends, I assume you also know that he's head of the police here. I think he might be interested to hear your proposition.
I don't know what you mean. I only want to see justice done, Colonel. The evidence suggested certain possible theories concerning Rebecca's death. One of them, of course, is suicide. Now, I have a little note here which puts that possibility quite out of court. You read it, Colonel?
Yeah. Jack, darling, I've just seen the doctor and I'm going down to Manderley right away. I shall be at the cottage all this evening and shall leave the door open for you. I have something terribly important to tell you. Rebecca.
Now, does that look like the note of a woman who'd made up her mind to kill herself? Come, Colonel, as an officer of the law, don't you feel that there are some slight grounds for suspicion?
Of murder?
Or what else?
It's blackmail, pure and simple.
Well, blackmail's not so pure nor so simple. Mr. Favelle, perhaps you can provide us also with a motive.
I knew you were going to bring that up, Colonel.
Yes?
I'll supply that, too.
Oh, Maxim, what is he going to do?
Will you come in, Mrs. Danvers? Thank you. Colonel Julian, Mrs. Danvers, I believe you know everyone else, Danny.
Mrs. Danvers, there are a few questions...
No offense, Colonel, but I think if I put this to Danny, she'll understand it more easily. Danny... Who was Rebecca's doctor?
Mrs. De Winter always had Dr. McLean from the village.
Now, you heard. I said Rebecca's doctor in London. We know that Rebecca went to a doctor in London on the last day of her life. Who was it?
I don't know.
Oh, I understand, Danny. You're trying to defend her. But that's just what I'm doing.
Mrs. Danvers, it has been suggested that Mrs. De Winter was deliberately murdered.
Murdered?
There you have it in a nutshell, Danny. But there's one more thing you'll want to know, the name of the murderer. George Fortescue Maximilian de Winter. Well, Danny?
There was a doctor. Mrs. de Winter sometimes went to him privately.
Well, what was his name?
Dr. Baker. 165 Gold Hawk Road, Shepherd's Bush.
There you are, Colonel. There's where you'll find your motive. He'll tell you why Rebecca went to him, to confirm the fact that she was going to have a child, a sweet, curly-headed little child. She told Max about it. For like the gentleman of the old school that he is, he killed her.
Maxim, I'm afraid we shall have to question this Dr. Baker.
I'm ready to leave now, if you wish.
Oh, Maxim, let me go, will you?
Oh, please, darling. Wait for me at Manderley. I'll be back the first thing in the morning.
Guess there's only room for one host around here.
That would be you.
Yeah, my internet's back. I have my internet back.
Yay! Okay, yeah. Okay.
No, it's good, not good. Letting me in as host because there's someone in there as host. I wonder who it could be. It's okay.
I don't know, but if I hang up, the show will be over.
Yeah, so we can't do that. I will have to continue being a guest.
You can still push buttons. You can push buttons now.
I know, it's fine.
Sorry, gentlemen, I wouldn't be able to help you be the ad hoc host. If you both disconnect, it will probably kick me out as well.
Show starts in one minute.
See, it works.
It's been
there
kicking me out. All right. It's been kicking me out anyway, so.
Oh, I know. You folks have no idea what a rough time we have here.
Oh, here it comes.
I mean, poor CW's trying to get Wi-Fi. Dr. Smith is being mean to the robot.
Then you're stuck
enough
with
of that.
Yep.
Oh, even the goat's upset now.
Yeah, the goat is the one who saved the night so far.
Yeah, so far.
Well, I'm Dave, and Dave taking over the steering wheel. That was good.
Well, I'm glad you're back. Glad you're back. Believe me, I am.
No matter what happens, folks, Erie House will find a way to go on, one way or another.
Only one time when the whole Blog Talk Radio was basically down for like 2 days. That was about the only time we wasn't able to do. And I think we did it on a Sunday to make up for that Saturday show.
As I recall,
I think that's what happened.
About right.
Yeah. But
I think I remember that. I called in. I didn't realize what was going on. I thought, oh, well, fine. They don't want me there. Be that way.
Yeah. No, that's another night. We said, thanks,
we
Blog
would never
Talk.
Do that to you. Gar, maybe, but
no.
Yeah.
Woo! Each other. And each other, maybe, but not you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
it wouldn't be gentlemanly of us.
It seems to me, Dale,
sorry,
that we have one
now?
More. Yeah, you said gentlemanly. We never fit into that mold.
Well, but we're trying. And we're faking.
Hello, Noise. Gar says, hello, Noise. Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Hello to you.
Yeah. So, Dale, we got one more part here. I think you should hit the button on that one.
Shiny button. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, working internet. Shiny button.
Let's wrap up our movie. That's right, a radio movie from Luke's Theater. Here's Rebecca, the conclusion. We have just enough time for...
I searched the beach frantically for Maxim, but there was no sign of him. Then suddenly I came upon the boathouse, Rebecca's cottage. There was a light burning dimly in the window. I pushed open the door, and there in the light of the dying fire, I saw the tortured face of Maxim.
Hello. Come in.
Maxim, you haven't had any sleep. Have you forgiven me?
Forgiven you?
For last night, Maxim. My stupidity about the costume.
Oh, that's... I'd forgotten.
Oh, Maxim, Can't we start all over again? I don't ask that you should love me. I won't ask impossible things. I'll be your friend and companion. I'll be happy with that.
You love me very much, don't you?
But it's too late, my darling. We've lost our little chance of happiness.
No, Maxim, no.
It's all over now. Rebecca has won. Her shadow has been between us all the time, keeping us from one another. She knew that this would happen.
What are you saying, Maxim?
They sent a diver down. He found another boat.
I know. Rebecca's boat.
The diver made another discovery. He broke one of the ports and looked into the cabin. There was a body in there.
A body? Well, then she wasn't alone. There was someone sailing with her.
No, you don't understand. There was no one with her. It's Rebecca's body lying there.
For a solid week, David has been following Anne. By night, by day, by taxicab, by ferryboat, he's trailed her jealously. And now the trail has led, of all places, to David's office.
Good afternoon, Mr. Smith.
Hello, where's my wife?
Well, she...
She came up here, I saw her. Where is she, in my office?
No, sir, she's in Mr. Custer's office.
Oh.
Mr. Custer's parents just arrived from the south. They surprised him.
You mean they're in there now?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
That's
really fine. Hello, David. Hello, Jeff. Excuse me, just a minute, folks. Jeff, what are we going to do about poor old Conley? His case is coming up soon.
Why, you must be David Smith.
Jefferson's partner.
Folks, this is David Smith. My parents, David.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do?
I'm happy to know you.
The pleasure's all ours.
And, dear, this is Mr. Smith, Jefferson's partner. Miss Anne Crossheimer, Mr. Smith.
Oh, we met some time ago.
Yes, we used to be roommates.
Sit right down, my boy. Sit right down. We'll get acquainted at once. You know, Mr. Smith, Mother and I just met Anne. And we find out now that she and Jeff are both mighty sweet on each other.
Ashley.
Why, David probably knows it better than we do, don't you, David?
Well, if it wasn't for me, they'd never even gotten together. I played Cupid. Caught cold doing it.
Oh, that's so romantic.
Any of your family from the South, Miss Krausheimer?
Well, no, not exactly. But in the Civil War, I had a relative in the North who didn't fight at all. He was a slacker.
A great many Northerners saw it that way, ma'am, and I gave them credit.
Never had a patient by the name of Rebecca De Winter?
Never.
You're sure of that, Dr. Baker?
Oh, of course. Here are all the appointments for that day. Ross, Campbell, Steadall, Perino, Danvers, Matthews...
Danny, what the... Did you read that name again? Did you say Danvers?
Why, yes, I had a Mrs. Danvers for 3 o'clock.
What did she look like? Can you remember?
Oh, yes, I remember her quite well. She was a very beautiful woman. Tall, dark, exquisitely dressed.
Rebecca.
The lady must have used an assumed name, Doctor.
Ah, is that so? This is a surprise.
What was the matter with her?
My dear sir, there are certain...
Now, could you supply a reason, Dr. Baker, for Mrs. De Winter's suicide?
For her murder, you mean? She's going to have a child, wasn't she? Come on, out with it.
No, she was not, Mr. Favell. But she was very seriously ill.
She was not going to have a child?
That was what she thought, but my diagnosis was different. She wanted the truth, and I told her. She had only a few months to live.
A few months?
Perhaps even less. There was nothing could be done, nothing that she could do except wait.
Did she say anything when you told her?
Oh, she smiled in a queer sort of way. Oh, yes, I remember she said something that struck me as being very peculiar at the time. When I told her it was a matter of months, she said, "Oh, no, Doctor, not that long."
You've been very kind. You've told us all we wanted to know. I should like to have a talk with you, Mr. Favell.
Well, I didn't know that. I thought...
Will we be needed at the inquest any further, Colonel Julian?
No. I can see to it that Maxim's not troubled any further.
Thank you, sir. Frank?
Yes?
There's something you don't know.
Oh, no, there isn't.
There is. I didn't kill her, Frank. But I know now that when she told me about the child, she wanted me to kill her. She lied on purpose. She foresaw the whole thing. That's why she stood there laughing when she...
Don't think about it anymore. What's the matter, Max? Why'd you stop?
What time is it?
Oh, it must be 3 or 4. Why?
Well, look at the sky. Over that way. That can't be the dawn breaking.
Hardly. Perhaps it's the northern lights. It's in the winter that you see them, isn't it?
They aren't northern lights. That's Mandalay. It's burning. Robert, have you seen Mrs. De Winter? Where is she?
Maxton, here.
Darling.
Oh, thank heaven you've come back to me.
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right, Maxton. But Mrs. Danby, she's gone mad. She's thought of the fire. She said she'd rather destroy Mandalay than see us happy here.
There she is at that window, the west wing.
Oh, Maxton, she'll be killed. She'll... Ow! Last night, I dreamt I went to Mandalay again. As I stood there, hushed and still, I could swear that the house was not an empty shell, but lived and breathed as it had long ago. But Mandalay is no more, and we're happy now, Maxim and I, for all our fears and suffering lie buried in its ruins.
Mr. DeMille and our stars will be back for their curtain calls in just a moment. But now Sally seems to have something on her mind. What is it, Sally?
It's a riddle for you to answer, Mr. Ruick. Listen. What articles of feminine wearing apparel will, if stretched end to end, go around the world 25 times, and yet no woman thinks she ever has enough of them?
Oh, I give up. Tell us, Sally.
Silk stockings, Mr. Ruick. In 1939, American women bought 682 million pairs of silk stockings. Stretched end to end, they would go 25 times around the world.
Why, you take my breath away, Sally.
And now, guess how long it takes to wash all those stockings?
I don't need to guess that, Sally. I know that New Quick Lux is America's favorite stocking care. And for these speedy flakes, it takes only a few moments a day to give stockings safe care.
That's right, because New Quick Lux flakes are so fast.
In water as cool as your hand, they dissolve 3 times as fast as any of 10 other leading soaps.
And that saves time.
And New Quick Lux is thrifty, because a little goes so far. That saves money.
And it's so safe, so gentle.
Yes. No wonder over 90% of the makers of women's stockings recommend Lux. It's so gentle, it saves stocking elasticity and cuts down on runs. Why not get that generous big box of Lux Flakes tomorrow for your stockings and other washables? You'll be delighted at how much longer they stay lovely with Lux Care. And the sooner you get the big Lux box, the sooner you can send for your beautiful Gone with the Wind brooch. Send the opening tab from the large box and 15 cents in coin to Lux, Box 1, New York City. Now, here's Mr. DeMille with our stars.
Ronald Coleman, Ida Lupino, and Judith Anderson are here at the microphone again. And with them, we have a special guest tonight, the producer of the motion picture Rebecca, Mr. David O. Selznick.
Thank you, C.B. Purely as a member of the audience who enjoyed this radio play, I'd like to congratulate my old friend Ronald Coleman, Ida Lupino, and Judith Anderson on the fine performances they gave.
David, we were all delighted you could be here tonight.
I think it's wonderful when a producer spends his day off watching someone else produce.
You seem to enjoy that part especially, Mr. Selznick.
Well, I was as interested as though I'd never heard the story before. But then DeMille Productions have been moving and entertaining audiences ever since I can remember.
That's nice to hear, David, but don't go away. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I have an award to present to Mr. Selznick on behalf of the editors of Fame, representing 15,000 motion picture exhibitors and 80 million theatergoers. The award covers 26 of your pictures, David. Pictures like A Tale of Two Cities, which starred Ronald Coleman a few years ago, David Copperfield, Rebecca, and Gone with the Wind, which captured 10 out of 14 Academy Awards last year and brought you personally the Irving Thalberg Memorial Trophy for maintaining the highest quality in production. The Fame Award reads, in token of his record as a producer of the greatest number of box office champion pictures over a period of 9 years, denoting a special consistency of high competence in the art, Fame has the honor to present this document of commemoration to Mr. David Oliver Selznick. Signed, Martin Quigley, publisher of Fame.
I'm very grateful to the editors of Fame, C.B., and for this distinction. And I'm doubly appreciative to have it presented by so great a showman as yourself. But this award should really have been made to 300 or 400 of my associates, writers, directors like Victor Fleming of Gone with the Wind, and Alfred Hitchcock, who did such magnificent work on Rebecca, to cameramen and hundreds of other craftsmen, and naturally to talented players like Mr. Coleman and Miss Anderson.
That's very generous, David. Of course, you could cut that award up into 400 pieces, but I suppose it looks better as it is.
In fact, Mr. Selznick, we forbid you to divide it up.
You're all very kind. And right now, C.B., I'd like to congratulate you and your staff on the result of the New York World Telegram's annual poll of the nation's radio editors. I've just learned that your program has been selected as radio's leading dramatic program for the 7th successive year. That's quite an honor, C.B.
It's more than that to us, David. It's something to live up to.
Well, tell us, C.B., what you're going to do next, both on the screen and here in the Lux Radio Theater.
Well, I'm turning to the sea for my next picture, Ronnie. You probably read the story in the Saturday Evening Post. It's Reap the Wild Wind, a swashbuckling tale of wreckers on the Florida coast 100 years ago, and of a woman who wrecked a few hearts.
Well, that sounds very exciting, Mr. DeMille. What about the Lux Radio Theater next week?
Never a dull moment, Ida. Our stars will be Carol Lombard and James Stewart. You'll hear them in The Moon's Our Home. It's a story about a screen star and an explorer who fall in love, more or less incognito. Add Carol Lombard and James Stewart to a play like that, and the sum is pure enjoyment for all of us next Monday night.
Well, they're two favorites of mine, so I'll be in the audience. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. And this certainly was a blue ribbon night. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents James Stewart and Carol Lombard in The Moon's Our Home. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Ronald Coleman will soon be seen in the RKO picture, My Life with Caroline. Ida Lupino's current screen success is the Warner Brothers production, High Sierra. Heard in tonight's play were Roland Drew as Frank, Dennis Green as Favelle, Verna Felton as Mrs. Van Hopper, Frederick Warlock as Colonel Julian, Hans Conried as Dr. Baker, and Lou Merrill as Coroner. The brooch offered you by the makers of Lux Flakes was designed from one worn in Gone with the Wind, the Selznick International picture produced by David O. Selznick and released by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Our music is directed by Louis Silvers, and your announcer has been Melville Ruick.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, there we go. Another fine show. Another fine show that we almost didn't finish properly. I wonder how that happened.
I was wondering what was happening there.
The 90-second warning has gone, Dale, just so you know.
Yes, I know. we'll be back next week with something. I have no idea what. Maybe. Shadow, Suspense, Inner Sanctum, and then Saturday, Sherlock Holmes and the Wizard. That's next week. In about a minute and I don't know how many seconds, it's Gar the Ghoul, when Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul. That's on them Twitches right after we're done here in just a few minutes. Seconds.
Yep, seconds, yes.
Thanks, Fox Bean, good old Bob, for putting up with our blog talk and internet issues. Hope you enjoyed our drive-in feature. We'll be back next week. Good luck in prison. What else we got? Halloween coming up, big 4 days in a row. It'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. Halloween week.
Yep.
And we'll see you then, folks.
10 seconds. Ten seconds.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in France.
Yours is right. And since Vince forgot CW again, I just put a fork in him.
Yep. Pulled the plug. Yep.
There we go. Well, we lived through another weekend.
Interesting evening.
Yes, indeed. But I appear to have my internet's back.
That's the most important thing.
Cool. So, did you have to leave the house, drive to Burger King, and pick up their internet?
No. No. One of the providers, from what I understand, the wife was doing some neighborhood snooping. One of the providers like screwed it up for everybody. They did something with routing that just like totally fouled up everybody in Wellington. So. Thanks a lot.
Ah, they fried it.
Allegedly, it wasn't ours, but that's allegedly.
You can't blame me. I'm nowhere there. It's not me that's draining your internet.
No, can't blame CW. Can't blame you this time.
Not this time.
No time. Good. Eerie House next week.
Well, I'm sorry you had such a trials and tribulations.